The following message comes to you from the pulpit of Macedonia Primitive Baptist Church in Ackerman, Mississippi. We invite you to visit Macedonia Primitive Baptist Church for worship services every Sunday morning at 10:30 a.m. Macedonia is located at 11 Staten Road on Highway 15, 5 miles north of Ackerman, Mississippi. For more information about Macedonia Primitive Baptist Church, you may visit our website at macedonia-pbc.org.
Let's turn together in the Word of God to the book of Ruth. We want to continue our thoughts through the book of Ruth. We concluded chapter 1 last time, and chapter 1 sets very much a negative backdrop, but you kind of have to see the dark before the dawn sometimes, and it sets a very negative backdrop with Elimelech choosing to leave Bethlehem Judah in the house of bread during a time of famine, and taking his wife Naomi and sons Mahlon and Chilion, and then of course Elimelech, Mahlon, and Chilion all end up passing away during their time there in Moab, in their 10 years in Moab. And now Naomi has heard that there's bread again in the land of Bethlehem, Judah, and she's returned. And Naomi, or Ruth rather, makes a commitment to Naomi to stick with her till death do them part, for all practical purposes. And the closing of chapter 1 really sets the tone for the rest of the book. And they just happen to show up by the providence of God back in Bethlehem, Judah, in the beginning of the barley harvest. So now in chapter 2 and in verse 1. And Naomi had a kinsman of her husband, a mighty man of wealth of the family of Elimelech, and his name was Boaz. And Ruth the Moabitess said unto Naomi, let me now go to the field and glean ears of corn after him, in whose sight I shall find grace. And she said unto her, go, my daughter. And she went and came and gleaned in the fields after the reapers, and her hap was to light on a part of the field belonging unto Boaz, who was of the kindred of Elimelech. And behold, Boaz came from Bethlehem and said unto the reapers, the Lord be with you. And they answered him, the Lord bless thee. And then said Boaz unto his servants that was set over the reapers, whose damsel was this? And the servant that was set over the reapers answered and said, it is the Moabite's damsel that came back with Naomi out of the country of Moab. And she said, I pray you, let me glean and gather after the reapers among the sheaves. So she came and hath continued even from the morning until now, that she tarried a little in the house. Then said Boaz unto Ruth, hearest thou not, my daughter? Go not to glean in another field, neither go from hence, but abide here fast by my maidens. Let thine eyes be on the field that they do reap, and go after them. Have I not charged the young men that they shall not touch thee? And when thou art athirst, go into the vessels and drink of that which the young men have drawn. And then she fell on her face and bowed herself to the ground and said unto him, why have I found grace in thine eyes that thou shouldest take knowledge of me, seeing I am a stranger? And Boaz answered and said unto her, it hath fully been shown me all that thou hast done unto thy mother-in-law since the death of thine husband, and how thou hast left thy father and thy mother in the land of thy nativity, and art come unto a people which thou knewest not heretofore. The Lord recompense thy work, and a full reward be given thee of the Lord God of Israel, under whose wings thou art come to trust. Then she said, let me find favor in thy sight, my Lord, for thou hast comforted me, and thou hast spoken friendly unto thine handmaid, though I be not like unto one of thy handmaidens. And Boaz said unto her, at mealtime come thou hither, and eat of the bread, and dip of a morsel in the vinegar. And she sat beside the reapers, and reached her parched corn. And she did eat, and was sufficed and left. And when she was risen up to glean, Boaz commanded his young men, saying, let her glean among the sheaves, and reproach her not. And let fall also some of the handfuls of purpose for her, and leave them, that she may glean them, and rebuke her not. Now, I don't know if we'll be able to deal with all this morning, or we might have to come back and consider this in a later message. But I want to back up for a minute okay? And understand that this is a real event, okay? This happened. These were real people in Boaz and Ruth, and we see some very great principles of sacrifice, of commitment and marriage that we saw in chapter 1, but then also the characteristics that are displayed by both Ruth and Boaz that are both attractive to the other parties. We have some very good principles in that regard in a micro level, but we also want to back up and look at this in a more macro level, in a more broad sense. Because the book of Ruth comes between the book of Judges and the book of 1 Samuel. And this book is really the connecting link between those two books and those two distinctly different periods in Israel's history, okay? Because during the time of the judges, you have a time that every man did what was right in his own eyes. And we talked about that a couple weeks ago, right? That they made bad decisions, they would go and they would worship all these false gods, and then the Lord would send them oppression, and they would be in bondage and be in misery and oppression, and then they would repent, and the Lord would send them a judge, and then they would act right for a little bit as long as that judge was alive, and the judge would die, and then rinse, repeat, go through the same cycle again. And that is all throughout the book of Judges. And then you have this book that kind of connects that time of the judges, that's when this occurred, most likely during the Moabite oppression and in the aftermath of the Moabite oppression. And then you have 1 Samuel, that the first portion of that book is the conclusion of the time of the judges. And then what does the Lord establish during the book of 1 Samuel? It's the kingdom, right? It's the kingdom, and the people certainly choose the people's choice of Saul, but the Lord intended the entire time to establish a man after his own heart, which was David, who was of the tribe of Judah, and it was intended all along for the tribe of Judah to be the kingly line. Now, the reason why this is a connecting link is because as we progress on to Ruth chapter 4, we're going to see a genealogy that Boaz marries Ruth, and then as we follow that genealogy along, we see that they are actually the great-grandparents of King David, okay? So it's through this providential guidance of God, of Ruth, back into the land of Bethlehem, Judah, and then the way in which he interweaves his providence in bringing her into the field of Boaz. This is the connecting link between the time of just chaos and incivility to now the kingdom period. And Ruth ends up being, again, the great-grandmother of King David, who, again, is a man after God's own heart, and the Lord made a strong covenant with him to build his house and so many other significant things that happened in the kingship and under the authority of David. So that is a very important point of connecting the time periods during the history of the nation of Israel. But we see the precise description of God's guidance and interaction in the life of Ruth and in Boaz in an individual way. But then, and I think that teaches us some very good lessons about, again, marriage and principles of courtship and other things. But then also we need to zoom back a little bit and look at a more macro level, a broader sense, and realize that even though this is a real story, it is teaching us principles about Christ's love for the church and Christ's role as the kinsman redeemer for the church, who's willing to sacrifice and wed this stranger who should not have been accepted into the culture of Israel, but yet there was a man who looked upon that woman who didn't fit in and who was despised by everyone else. There was a man that looked upon her with grace and with love and was willing to make the commitment to be her kinsman redeemer. So there are great principles in an individual sense, but then also we need to, as we go through these, keep in mind the broader lesson, right, of Jesus Christ and his sacrifice on behalf of his bride and his willingness to take upon himself the mantle of a kinsman redeemer to shed his blood to save us from our sins. Okay? So, when they arrive back in Bethlehem, Judah, we're introduced here to a man named Boaz in chapter 2 and in verse 1. And Naomi had a kinsman of her husband, a mighty man of wealth, and he was of the family of Elimelech, and his name was Boaz. Now, the names of each of the characters in this story have been very significant, and I'm not going to rehearse all of those that we have addressed previously. But Boaz, his name means strength. Boaz was one of the names that was given to one of the two main pillars in the temple. And think about a pillar. Think about how that symbolizes strength and stability and perseverance, right? Well, I mean, not just a regular, you know, you got, you know, different posts and poles and stuff. But I'm talking about these are the two main pillars of Solomon's temple. I mean, that's holding a lot of weight. That is signifying strength and stability. And he's described here as being a mighty man of wealth. Now, that didn't just mean he was financially blessed. It certainly appears that he was. He had lands. He was in charge of the fields. He appears to be the owner of these fields. It does appear that he does have a good amount of material wealth. But really what's being conveyed there, that word wealth is the exact same word that's used by Boaz later in chapter 3 when he says, speaking to Ruth, that all the city has seen that thou art a virtuous woman. She had exhibited by her actions and her commitment to Naomi and then her interactions with people individually. Once she showed up in Bethlehem, Judah, she showed by her actions that she was a virtuous woman, that she had a godly disposition and character. And that same word is used to describe Boaz. It's not just that he had money, okay? And it does appear that he was financially successful. But he was a mighty man, not just of currency, but of virtue and character and strength. Strength and stability. And there should always be a balance. Well, unfortunately, the men in America have been feminized to a large degree. There should be strength in the males in our culture, but also a kind tenderness that we see displayed in Boaz, okay? And that's the balance, right? That's the balance between Christ as the Lion of the tribe of Judah, but also the Lamb of God that taketh away the sin of the world. And Christ is our standard, right? And certainly we're not Christ, and we're not going to meet that standard as we ought, but there is a strength that should be conveyed by disciples of Christ, the brothers in the church, but also a kind, soft tenderness, the Lion and the Lamb, just like our example, Jesus Christ, okay? But I want you to notice, this is a mighty man of wealth. He stayed in Bethlehem, Judah, during a time of famine. And you know what? He was blessed in doing that. Okay? I want you to notice and contrast that with what happened with Naomi and Elimelech. They went out during a time of famine looking for the easy route, looking for the safe passageway, the people that, instead of trusting the Lord in the house of bread, remember Bethlehem, Judah, Bethlehem's the house of bread, instead of trusting the God of the harvest to provide for them in the house of bread, they went into Moab. What did Boaz do? He remained faithful during a time of famine. And guess what? The Lord blessed him during that time of famine to be a mighty man of wealth. And now he stuck it out. He was godly and diligent during a difficult time period. And the Lord has honored that faithfulness. And the Lord always honors faithfulness in the time of difficulty. Okay? We don't turn tail and run when things get tough, when there's a time of famine, and then come back like Naomi did when things are all hunky-dory. The Lord blesses and honors faithfulness in the midst of difficulty. Okay? Faithfulness in the midst of famine. And not just financially. Boaz was blessed financially. It's obvious by his possessions in the fields that he owned that he was in charge of. But the Lord blessed him because of his faithfulness to remain diligent in the house of bread during a time of famine. And Ruth has showed back up in town with Naomi, but she's a foreigner. She's a stranger, which means a person of a different country, not just that they don't know them. That's a classification of a foreigner in the Levitical law, okay? And Naomi's a widow. So how are they going to eat? I mean, it's great that you're in the house of bread with the Lord's blessing, but you got to get food. So what are you going to do? Well, Ruth is younger and more physically fit than Naomi, no doubt. So she says, I'm going to go glean in the field, right? Ruth, the Moabitess, said unto Naomi, let me now go into the field and glean ears of corn after him, in whose sight I shall find grace. And she said, go, my daughter. Now the Lord established a provision. This is in Leviticus chapter 19, verses 9 and 10. That if you had a field and you were reaping that field, you did not reap every single little bitty ear in that field. You left the corners. You literally cut the corners to leave those corners for the poor and the strangers in the land. And I'll tell you, Ruth fits both accounts. She showed up with nothing. I mean, her and Naomi, they come back into town. They don't have the land that's going to be redeemed yet. They certainly don't have any possessions. And what are we going to do to eat tonight? Well, we're going to have to go out and find something. And she's poor, and she is a legal stranger. She's a foreigner. But the Lord provided in His law that if you own fields, you are not going to be greedy, and you are not going to just pluck every single ear out of that. You are commanded to leave a portion of that to care for the poor and the strangers in Israel. So, with that provision, Naomi certainly relayed to Ruth that you can go and glean in the corners of the field. So she goes out and is willing to diligently labor to provide for both herself, but also willing to provide for Naomi. Okay? In verse 3, she went and came and gleaned in the field after the reapers. And notice this language in your King James Bible. And her hap was to light on a part of the field belonging unto Boaz, who was of the kindred of Elimelech. It just so happened. It was just happenstance. Well, I'm going to tell you, it wasn't happenstance. It was the guiding providence of God. And this is an underlying theme throughout this entire book that reaches its climax right here in this period. And what's really neat about this story, okay, is Ruth, through everything that we're considering this morning, she has no idea who Boaz is in the sense of being a kinsman redeemer, okay? She doesn't know who he is. He is just being a kind owner of the field that he's in. And I want you to know, even though she doesn't know who Boaz is, Boaz knows exactly who she is. Boaz is the person who initiates the grace and the favor that he shows unto Ruth. And I want you to think about that as we go through this, because this is a depiction of our greater Boaz, who he took the initiative. He looked at a ruined, ostracized, would have been looked down upon Moabite, and he showed grace and favor to a stranger in the land that everyone else would have looked down their nose at and had nothing to do with. But there was a man that looked upon, and I want you, this is important, Boaz took note of her before she knew anything about him. Okay? But she goes into, you know, of all of the of all of the possibilities, of all the probabilities, of all the fields that she could go into in Bethlehem, Judah. Now, Bethlehem, Judah, I understand it wasn't Jerusalem. You know, it wasn't New York City. It wasn't a metropolis. But of all the fields that she could have went into, by the Lord's guiding providence, it just so happened that her hap was to light upon the field of a man who happens to be a member of her family, who has the ability and the authority to be a kinsman redeemer in the future. I don't know if it's in these Primitive Baptist hymnals that we sing out of, but there's a song that says, "There is an unseen hand to me that leads through ways I cannot see. God moves in mysterious ways," is another song that depicts the story of Ruth and Boaz. But I want you to see what's really neat about this, okay, is that when Naomi was talking to Ruth before they went back to Bethlehem, Judah, she says, "No, don't come with me. You are going to be a foreigner. You are going to be hated. You are going to be ostracized. There's no way that you can get a husband. I don't want you to be miserable like me. I don't want you to live your whole life as a widow. Because there's almost no chance that you're going to get a husband in Israel. There's no chance of it. So I want you to just stay here in Moab. Because I don't want you to be as miserable as I think I'm going to be when I get back." But you know what? Despite that improbability, Ruth still said, "I'm going back with you." And through the guiding providence of God, she happens to show up in one of the few men who has the, of all the probability of not just her leaving her homeland, but then of all the fields that she could go in, she just happens to show up in the field of a man who can be her kinsman's redeemer, who has the authority and the right to do it, and also not just a man who has the authority, because we're going to see later on in chapter 4, that was a man who was a closer kinsman, but he didn't want to marry Moabitess. He didn't want to have anything to do with her. He didn't want to mar his own inheritance. But it wasn't just that he had the right legal relationship. He was the right kind of man. But you know what? Ruth didn't know any of that. She just shows up and she says, "We got to get something to eat tonight." And the Lord just happened to guide her into the right field at the exact right time. And I hope that you can see in your life God's unseen hand. You know, it's always 20/20. Hindsight's always 20/20, right? Understand, Ruth didn't know what was happening when it was happening. We can read it. We can see it coming, right? But she doesn't know. And she sure enough doesn't know. This is the point I got distracted on that I was going to make. When she was over there in Moab, with no prospects for a husband, and saying she's going to go with Naomi, despite what you say to me is going to be this horrible existence that I'm going to have in Bethlehem, Judah, what would you have thought Ruth would have told you if you said, "Not only are you going to come, but you're going to have a husband in about a month and a half, And you are going to be the great grandmother of a man who is going to be the king of Israel. She would have said, psh, get out of here. What you talking about? That's impossible. Well, guess what? That's exactly what happens. Okay? What would you have anticipated Boaz would have said if he's an older man by this time? We find from chapter 3. What would you have said if you would have told him that a month and a half from now there's going to be a lady that shows up? There may not be any prospects on your radar right now, but a woman is just going to show up in your field who you're going to end up marrying in a month and a half and tell him the same thing. Oh, yeah, by the way, you're going to be the granddad of the future king of Israel. And even if you told them that, that would have sounded, one reason it would have sounded so ludicrous is because, look, we don't have a king. What are you talking about? Wait, this is the time of the judge. We don't even have a king. Like, what you're saying doesn't even make sense. But even though if you would have asked Ruth and Boaz if what ends up happening had any probability of occurring, they would have said, no, there's no way that would have happened. But you know what? In spite of that, God intended for that to happen, and He was guiding every single step of the way with His unseen hand to get His people in the right place at the right time to accomplish His will. And you know what? I can relate to that in my life. That the Lord, in hindsight, I can see the Lord was guiding with His unseen hand, but it was not because I was making spiritual decisions. It's not because I was earnestly praying, Lord, nevertheless not my will, but Thine be done. But the Lord was guiding me anyway. Hopefully up to where I am right now. I'll tell you, the Lord is oftentimes at work behind the scenes, even if we can't see it right now. Okay? Because you never know when you're going to show up at the beginning of the barley harvest. All right? And just so happen to show up in the exact right field at the exact right time for the Lord to pour out His blessings of grace upon you. Which is exactly what we see in the field of Boaz. Now, Boaz shows up, and he's a very godly employer, it certainly seems like. The Lord's blessed him during a time of famine, and he goes, and just like any, you know, good supervisor would be, he's on top of his business, and he goes to the field, and he asks his supervisors there, the Lord be with you. And they answered him, the Lord bless you. You know, wouldn't it be great to work for somebody that walked in every morning and, you know, said a good morning, and, you know, good morning oftentimes is a courtesy. You know, something that you say. Very rarely is it a good morning when some people say good. Well, you know, I can't speak for you, but sometimes at work, where I work at, when people say good morning, it's not always a good morning. But wouldn't it be great to work for an employer that when he got there in the morning, he said, the Lord be with you. That's an employer I think I'd want to work with. And you know what? They said, the Lord bless thee. He's a godly employer, and he's also attentive to the state of his fields, right? So, what's going on? You know, that's what a supervisor does. Comes in, checks in. Okay, anything going on? What do I need to know about? I've got more fields I need to go to. What's going on? Anything I need to know about? Are we good to go? If not, I'm going to go on about my business. And Boaz takes notice of a new person gleaning in his field. Verse 5. Boaz said unto his servants that was set over the reapers, whose damsel is this? He took notice that there was a new person gleaning. Now understand, these gleaners are just the people that are gleaning in the corners of the fields. So he's attentive, right? It's not just that if he hires a new reaper, certainly he's going to know about that. But he's noticing a young, new damsel just laboring off in the corner of the field somewhere. But you notice how attentive he is. And he says, whose damsel is this? And the servant said, it's that Moabite's damsel that came back from Naomi, came with Naomi out of the country of Moab. And she said, I pray you let me glean and gather after the reapers of the harvest. she came and hath continued even from morning until now, that she tarried a little in the house. So Boaz takes note of this new damsel that's laboring in his field. And I want you to understand that when Naomi came back, first of all, it caused a lot of buzz in the community with her just coming back. Saw that in verse 19 of chapter 1. All the city was moved about them, and they said, "Is this Naomi? Is this really her? Wow, you've had a tough 10 years being gone." But the rumor mill and the buzz in the community was about not just Naomi coming back, but this Moabite woman, this Moabite daughter-in-law that came back with her. And I think that she committed for some reason that our God was going to be her God, and Naomi's people was going to be her people, and she committed to, like, death. You know, could you imagine the way that, have y'all ever played that game, what's it called, telephone? You know, where you tell somebody one thing on one end, and somebody tells the other, and then what does it sound like by the end of it? Can you only imagine what the rumor mill sounded like? How inaccurate, most likely, the story was by the time it got around to different folks. But what I'm saying is, Boaz knew, and especially since it was family, right? And family taught worse than anybody. So he'd heard, right? Oh, Naomi's back. Oh, and there's a Moabite woman with her. Moabite woman with her. And then the servant kind of pegs it down and says, okay, you don't know what you've heard about? This is her. This is that Moabite woman that you've heard about. And she came in and she just asked us to work. So she shows up first thing in the morning, asked to work, and they said, hey, she's been out there. She's been working hard. She only took a little bit of a break. This is before lunchtime, so Boaz is probably showing up, let's just say 11 o'clock or so. But she's already exhibited how hardworking she is. And she's already exhibited, just from her reputation, about the commitment that she had toward Naomi, about the type of woman that she is, and how diligent and faithful and committed she is. And then Boaz takes the initiative, okay? Boaz saw her long before she saw him. And it's important. He knows exactly who she is, but she does not yet know who he is, okay? So Boaz says unto Ruth, "Hearest thou not my daughter? Go not to glean in another field, neither go from hence, but abide here fast by my maidens. Let thine eyes be on the field that they do reap, and go after them. Have I not charged the young men that they should not touch thee? And when thou art athirst, go unto the vessels and drink of that which the young men have drawn." So if you're a gleaner, okay, and you're having to take advantage of this provision in the law to just go get the leftovers that are in the corners, you're going to have to go from field to field to field to try to get enough to provide for yourself. And he says, I mean, she's only been out there gleaning for, you know, a couple hours maybe, 3 or 4 hours. And he says, you don't go from field to field to field. You glean with my maidens. In other words, my workforce, my hired workforce, you glean with them. You stay in my field. Okay, I want you to notice three things that he provides. He takes the initiative to provide for the care and the protection of Ruth. He says, first of all, don't go from field to field. You hang out right with my maidens and with my reapers, and I'm going to make sure you're taken care of. But second of all, I can tell that you are an attractive young lady, and I have told my young men that they leave you alone. He cared for her protection, because I'm going to make sure they don't take advantage of you. And then, if you ever get thirsty, you just come and tell my men, and they're going to give you drink like everybody else. What's Ruth's reaction to that? I want you to notice, first of all, the character and the compassion that Boaz displays by
a stranger who's just gleaning here in the corners, and he takes the initiative and says, you don't go anywhere else, you glean in my field. I made sure these men, they're not going to take advantage of you, and I'm going to make sure you're protected, and if you get anything to drink, you go ask my man at head in charge, and he's going to give you as much as you want. And she says, so that's the character of protection and strength and provision that Boaz is displaying, right? But I want you to notice now the humility and the gratitude that Ruth displays. Then she fell on her face and bowed herself to the ground and said unto him, why have I found grace in thine eyes, that thou shouldest take knowledge of me, seeing I am a stranger? And I want you to notice what she immediately perceived that Boaz was bestowing upon her. Grace. Unmerited favor. See, she knew the challenges that she was going to have in Bethlehem, Judah. And you know what? This says, verse 13, she says again, let me find favor in thy sight, my Lord, for thou hast comforted me, for that thou hast spoken friendly unto thy handmaid, though I be not like unto one of thine handmaids. That tells me that there were some people since she showed up in Bethlehem, Judah, that were not speaking very friendly to her. I don't think she was being treated very well, outside of maybe Naomi. Why? Because let's not forget where we're at. They had been under 18 years of Moabite oppression, and now a Moabite shows up. I mean, could you just imagine us, let's just say things happened a little bit differently in World War II, and we were under German oppression, you know, for 18 years or something, and we just got liberated. How do you think you're going to treat Germans when you see them? Like, you're not going to treat them very well. That's just human nature, right? There's a lot of people that were probably speaking very disparagingly and looking at her and probably saying very negative comments about Ruth. And that's what she'd got used to. But she took notice that there was a man who treated her differently, who took initiative to show grace to her. Oh man, I hope that sounds like our greater Boaz to you. I hope that you see yourself in that ruined, unworthy Moabitess widow position and just looking for scraps. You know, think about Mephibosheth, right? Who was out there in Lodabar, a land of no pasture, who was of the enemy, of the lineage of the enemy of David. And what did David do to the posterity of his enemy because of the covenant that he had with Jonathan? He went and he got that lame Mephibosheth and he said, you're going to come into my house and you're going to eat like royalty. You're going to eat at the king's table and all the privileges, you're going to be treated just like a king's son. And Mephibosheth, he had that same humility, right? He said, king, why would you show this type of grace and gratitude upon such a dead dog as I? You know, sometimes we just have such a tendency to think of ourselves a lot more highly than we ought to think. We need to be reminded of how unworthy we are of God's blessings and the favor of the mighty man of wealth, Jesus Christ, and the privileges of his field, the privileges of being in a field where he's going to care for your protection and for your provision. And then we're going to find out later that not only is he making sure that she's going to get enough to go, he's going to purposefully tell his reapers that, you know what, there's some stuff that you're going to accidentally drop just in the night. You know, there's some natural losses that we're going to have just in normal operations. But I'm not going to let her just pick up the normal losses. I'm telling you to specifically dump. Now, I mean, when he says handfuls of purpose, he's not talking about, oh, we're going to drop one. She got so much at the end of the day, they probably lost half of their harvest. I mean, they were dumping off probably half of what they were picking up. So it's not just that he took note of her and cared for her provision and protection, and didn't just give her a baseline. He was giving her more accurate, like almost dump trucks of purpose. And she doesn't say, yeah, that's right, it's about time somebody gives me what I deserve. I've been treated just horrible since I got here, and it's about time somebody shows me some respect. She falls down on her face, and she says, I don't know who you are. You know, let's not miss it, okay? She doesn't even know that he's the kinsman. She didn't even know who this guy is. But she falls down on her face, and she says, I don't know who you are, and I don't know why you're doing this, and I don't know what I've done for you to show me this grace. Why should you take knowledge of me, seeing I am a stranger? I tell you, there's absolutely no reason that the Son of God should take note of ruined, unworthy Moabitess widows that he saw fit to covenant to marry. I'll tell you, can you imagine the type of looks and the type of... Boaz had a good reputation, okay? He was a mighty man of wealth. He was a godly man. But can you imagine what the people in the community that were talking bad about Ruth anyway, when they found out he was marrying that woman? Can you imagine the type of looks that they got? Let's be real here, okay? There's no new thing under the sun. And if there's been racial tension in every single society since the beginning of the world, and like I just said about those Germans, if they were oppressing us, and how would you feel if somebody in your family said, you know what, I'm going to marry one of these traitors? I don't think Boaz was treated very well from his decision to marry her either, okay? I have no idea why the Son of God looked upon a bride that in Ezekiel chapter 16 is described as being cast out in the field to the loathing of her own person, that is of a foreign lineage that was under a curse. And let's not forget, it's not just that they had interpersonal conflict with the Moabites now. This was a people that was cursed. This was the effect of Lot and his daughters in an incestuous relationship that created the Moabites and the Amorites that had a curse upon them to not enter into the congregation of Israel to the 10th generation. They had a legitimate reason to not place this particular family and ethnicity in a high regard, because they were cursed of the Lord. But I want you to notice that is who Boaz showed grace to. That is who Boaz loved. And that is who the Son of God loved before the foundation of the world. I have no idea what could have possibly attracted the most majestic, beautiful husband in this world, which is the Son of God, to such a ugly, ungrateful, wretched bride. But you know what? In Ezekiel chapter 16, it says that he looked upon her and it was a time of love. He loved her. And because he loved her, he showed grace to her. And I believe Boaz didn't necessarily say this in the text, and you can forgive me if I'm imposing this on it. But I've got a feeling that it was probably love at first sight when Boaz saw her. As soon as he found out who that was, it was love. Because the thing was, he knew, okay? She didn't know, but he knew that he was going to be second. And he knew immediately he was going to be second in line to be the kinsman redeemer. And as soon as he saw her, I think that he set his love upon her. And because he loved her, that's why he's showing this grace. Now, that love doesn't come into a consummation marriage until a later time. And maybe that love wasn't that romantic love to start with. But I want to tell you, I think there was a love at first sight that is exhibited by his actions of provision and care and protection for her. She looks and falls on her face and said, "I am so unworthy that you should even take note of me. I'm just a rank and file gleaner." It's not like she was the only one there. There were tons of folks there, except that she was new. But the real reason why Boaz took note of her is because he loved her. Because he decided to show grace and favor and affection to her. And Boaz says, Boaz answered and said unto her, "It hath fully been showed me all that thou hast done unto thy mother-in-law since the death of thine husband, and how that thou hast left thy father and thy mother and the land of thy nativity, and art come unto a people which thou knewest not hitherto. The Lord recompense thy work, and a full reward be given thee of the Lord God of Israel, under whose wings thou art come to trust." Let's not forget who he's talking to. He's talking to a Moabite who has grown up under false gods. But remember what she told Naomi? She said, "Your God is going to be my God." And you know what? You want to know what's really impressive about Ruth? Word got around quick of the type of commitment that she had, not just to Naomi, but to Jehovah God. And Boaz could see it immediately. He immediately says that the Lord that you trust in, he's going to bless you. And you know what? This is what we have. This is a very important point that we need to understand about providence that we're going to have to dig into in more depth in the future. Providence is not God having some angel lightning bolt from heaven to go do something. Providence is carried out in the normal everyday actions of our interactions with other people, of a Boaz being kind to Ruth, of a Naomi guiding Ruth back to Bethlehem, Judah. Providence is not some lightning bolt from heaven. It's God guiding the daily, ordinary affairs of life. And the ordinary Boazes and the ordinary Ruths to just happen to light on the right field at the right time, and to guide their spirit, to guide the spirit of Boaz to have compassion. I just believe there was something that struck him immediately about Ruth. And you don't know what that was? I think that was spurred by the Spirit of God. Providence is not abstract from your actions. And God oftentimes uses individual people to accomplish the ends of his providence. You see what I'm saying? God's not going to pick, if the end result is there being a man that's going to be the king of Israel, God didn't just pick Ruth up and immediately bring her and drop her in front of Boaz and say, "You marry this woman." No. It happened. That's the end result. But it happened through the normal, ordinary actions of daily life. Her going to work 8 to 5 and him supervising his fields and being an attentive supervisor to notice there's somebody else. Do you understand what I'm saying? Providence is not abstract from our actions. And oftentimes, the God will providentially bless other people, not through some lightning bolt from heaven, some manna falling down or a quail falling out of heaven. Most of the times, God is going to providentially bless other people through you. Okay? That's why we need to say, that's why we need to be so in tune with the Spirit of God. And say, "Lord, how will you see fit to use me today to providentially bless someone else?" And what's so amazing about this is oftentimes you're not even going to be able to see it while you're doing it. you're not even going to be able to see what the Lord is doing through you, even in the midst of it. Okay? I hope that we can see, first of all, what a great, mighty man of wealth that has bestowed favor upon such an unworthy Moabitess widow bride, which is Jesus Christ, okay? Which is Jesus Christ. And I hope that we can fall on our face today before God and say, Boaz, I don't know. I don't know why you saw fit to show favor to me. But you know what? I do want to fall on my face and honor you and praise you because I know I'm unworthy. And I just want to say thank you for showing favor to such an unworthy foreign Moabitess damsel just like me.
We thank you for listening to today's message and invite you to visit Macedonia Primitive Baptist Church for worship services every Sunday morning at 10:30 a.m. Macedonia is located at 11 Staten Road on Highway 15, 5 miles north of Ackerman, Mississippi. For further information about Macedonia Primitive Baptist Church, you may visit our website at macedonia-pbc.org.